I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Let the Capitol flight begin, or should I say continue, plus. Our free press fight continues, and how biased media coverage cost cities a valuable crime-fighting tool. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. This is not rocket science. When you target people for taxation, people who are able to leave will leave. That's what's happening not just in Washington State, but across the West Coast. You are seeing a mass exodus of wealth to the East Coast, to states like Tennessee and Texas and Florida. You're seeing businesses pick up and move their entire infrastructure, which costs hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars for some companies, because it's worth it to escape states like Washington. It's worth it to escape states like California and essentially start all over somewhere else. At the very beginning of the legislative session, you'll recall, I attended a press preview where lawmakers get before the media, although at the time I was considered press, maybe not anymore, and they answer questions about policies that they're going to pursue. And of course, one of the biggest topics of conversation at this legislative preview was their proposed income tax on quote-unquote millionaires. And you'll remember at the time, one of the Democrats denied the reality that if they passed this, wealthy people would leave.
The idea that we have capital flight, I have not seen any evidence of that whatsoever.
Then you're not paying. How can you, as a lawmaker, trying to pass an income tax and punish rich people, punish investors, punish entrepreneurs? How are you not reading anything? Are you living under a rock? Because as I told him at the time, have you heard of a guy named Jeff Bezos? Took almost $1 billion worth of taxes with him when he left to Florida. And then as the income tax debate was happening for 24 hours yesterday in the House, that same argument came up again. There was a Democratic lawmaker who said, oh no, millionaires aren't going to leave. That's not going to happen. Literally as she was saying that, Howard Schultz, the former CEO of Starbucks, was typing this, his goodbye letter to Seattle. This was posted mid-afternoon yesterday on his LinkedIn. I'm going to read the full thing because you know what? I think it's really important for Democrats to understand what they're doing and what is going to continue to happen. He said, 44 years ago, Sherry and I made the cross-country trip from New York City to Seattle in our 1979 Audi along with Jonas, our golden retriever. We were starting a new life. Sherry would be the breadwinner in the family, taking on a career in design. And I started a new job on September 7th, 1982 at a place called Starbucks. Back then, the Pike Place Starbucks only sold whole bean coffee. Today, it's the most visited Starbucks in the world. The history of the company is bound up in the very foundation, walls, and floorboards of our first store in the city's historic market. The spirit of continuing forward has long underpinned our approach to life, in business, in philanthropy, and most importantly, as a family. For those of you who know us well, we have entered the retirement phase of our lives, a term we're both just getting used to. Last year, we traveled to dozens of places around the world, places we were too busy to see when building Starbucks and raising kids. And now we have moved to Miami for our next adventure together. We are enjoying the sunshine of South Florida and its allure to our kids on the East Coast as they raise their families of their own. Like many other Seattle-based companies, Starbucks today stands on the shoulders of the many Pacific Northwesterners who built the company. They help shape the culture, the benefits, and the brand, contributing to the civic, community, and public life of the city and state. It is our hope that Washington will remain a place for business and entrepreneurship to thrive, creating essential opportunity for those in Seattle and the surrounding areas. Over the years, as Sherry and I grew our family and built Starbucks globally, we were witness to the astonishing development of Seattle. We focused on doing our part to help those at risk and facing hard times in our city. In 1990, Sherry started the Schultz Family Foundation, launching critical work to help others in our community and beyond. Work that has grown in scale and impact with each passing year. We have entrusted the leadership of the foundation to our friend and a mandate to accelerate our philanthropic investments to drive meaningful change. While our private family office will move to Miami, our foundation will continue operations in Seattle. We will forever be grateful for the memories made in Seattle and the relationships built along the way. To the family, friends, and partners who made Seattle our home for so many years, thank you. Onward, Sherry and Howard Schultz. He's gone. It's not a surprise to anyone with a brain. Him and Jeff Bezos can bask on Jeff Bezos' big yacht in Miami, where they're going to save hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes. Not only through the income tax on millionaires, but to avoid the capital gains tax, which is the reason Jeff Bezos left. By leaving, he saved $1 billion when he moved to Florida and sold stocks of Amazon. It doesn't matter how much money you have. For most of these entrepreneurs, they got that money through hard work. Jeff Bezos started Amazon in his garage. As Howard Schultz said, when he came to work at this little company called Starbucks that only sold whole bean coffee, decades ago, he put in hard work and determination and grew it to the largest coffee brand in the world. You don't do that with having a good without having a good head on your shoulders and common sense and business savvy. And you don't get rich by making bad business decisions. And Seattle is a bad business decision. Washington State is a bad business decision. And for these morons who continue to say out of their mouths that capital flight isn't a real thing, that capital flight isn't going to happen, what the hell do you call everything that's been going on for the last few months? I mean, Howard Schultz is leaving, but Starbucks as a company is on its way out too. They're moving to Tennessee. They're closing stores all across Seattle. How many stories? Yamaha leaving California for greener pastures. And there's, I mean, we could do a dozen stories on all the companies that have left the West Coast and fled. And I don't need to tell you guys this. Only a stupid person wouldn't understand it. Enter Bob Ferguson, the worst, who will go down in history as the worst governor in Washington State history. Within 3 months of taking the job, passed the largest tax increase in state history into law. And then his second year on the job, will put pen to paper and sign off on the death of the state's economy, the state that he was elected to serve and protect. So Howard Schultz is waving goodbye to Seattle, a place he's built a business and a family for decades. And Governor Bob Ferguson is celebrating it. Celebrating it. After the House passed, after 24 hours of debate, his beloved income tax. He said the millionaire's tax passed by the House represents historic progress in rebalancing our unfair system. If you call that historic progress, you are an absolute moron. And you know I don't like name calling on this show, but you actually have to be stupid or evil. Stupid or evil. I said yesterday that if I were trying to destroy a state's economy, I would do exactly what Bob Ferguson has done in his first 18 months on the job. He goes on to say, it sends significant dollars back to Washington families and small businesses. No, it doesn't. He says it expands the working families tax credit. That's money straight back into the pockets of working families. It saves working parents money and ensures our kids are prepared to learn by funding free breakfast and lunch for all Washington K-12 students. Falsehood. Says it's also been a priority of mine since I ran for governor. The millionaire's tax will apply to less than 0.5% of Washingtonians, but make life more affordable for millions. I look forward to signing it. How does it make life more affordable when it costs people their jobs? You can send as much tax relief back to people as you want. It doesn't mean jack if they don't have a job. Starbucks is moving jobs out of the city, out of the state. Amazon's moving jobs out of the state. AI entrepreneurs say we're not even going to come there. We're not even going to bother. The damage is done. Even Jay Inslee, as buffoonish as he was, didn't do anything this detrimental to Washington State's economy in the 12 years that he had the job. And these claims Bob's making, you know, he played hardball and said, I'm not going to sign it unless it's got all this tax relief and all these other things. The bill barely changed. That's why I said he was always going to sign it. He just wanted to act like he had, you know, he had your best interest in mind. The Washington Policy Center put out this very handy chart where they did an analysis of the bill and the income tax before Bob Ferguson made his demands for it to be quote unquote improved and the version that's going to head to his desk for a signature. So it goes through his demands, what's in the bill, and whether the bill actually accomplishes his demands. So he said crystal clear, he's been crystal clear in his support of a constitutional amendment limiting the income tax to millionaires. Well, did Democrats put a constitutional amendment in there? No, they voted the idea down multiple times. Ferguson said he wants free school lunch and breakfast for all students. And he said this bill accomplishes that. No, it doesn't. They put that language in the intent section, but there's no actual funding laid out that says this much of the revenue that comes in from the income tax has to go to free lunch, quote unquote. No such thing as free lunch. But then also we found out from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction that 75% of Washington public school students are already getting free meals thanks to federal and state programs. He said he wanted two sales tax holidays. House Democrats voted those ideas down. He said he wanted to limit sales tax on baby formula. House Democrats voted that idea down, not in the bill. He said he wanted small businesses not paying B&O taxes until they make $1 million in revenue. And he said it would result in $1 billion in relief. No, it's going to result in about $130 million in relief, not a billion. He said of the revenue that they're going to bring in, $3.5 billion a year, he wants $1.9 billion of it to be used for tax relief. Half that is going to be used. About $950 million will go into tax relief. And then he said he wanted a majority of the revenue from the income tax given back to the people in tax relief. 30%, less than 30% goes to people in tax relief. So the legislature quite literally met zero of his demands. And he's like, oh, great job. This is exactly what I wanted. I'm going to sign it. And here's what just kills me. I don't think he's dumb. I think Bob Ferguson is very intelligent. So either he has done a good job over the years of hiding himself as a far left ideologue, borderline socialist, or he's doing all of this on purpose. And to what end? Who is he trying to please or placate? And do they really not believe and understand what this is going to do to our state? I did a video last night on social, just giving my thoughts on the day. I've never been so depressed as I was last night about just the future of our state and the state of things and Howard Schultz moving to Florida. And it's just like, oh my God, can I come? And I have a lot of fight in me for this state. I do. I love it here. If it were easy for me to move and decide I don't want to be here, I would have moved a long time ago. I have no intention of moving. But given everything that was happening yesterday and all of this at once, it really does feel depressing. And we just think like, well, what can we do? How can we get people to wake up to the reality of the harm that they're causing? And it is hard. It is hard to watch businesses leave. It's hard because you know what that's going to do to the middle class. Like, I don't have, and it's not that I don't have sympathy. I mean, I care a lot about businesses because they bring so much to a society. And Howard Schultz talked about all the philanthropic work that they've done in the city of Seattle just to be vilified and demonized by the party in power. But when businesses leave, jobs leave. And when jobs leave, families hurt. And, you know, growing up in an environment where my dad was frequently unemployed and we struggled as a result, I don't want any family to have to deal with that. That is a reality. And I think these politicians are so disconnected from the reality of what their decisions do to people and do to families. And that really is the hardest part, is people are going to struggle and suffer and have to make some difficult decisions as a result of them pursuing this radical agenda. So I was super bummed yesterday, in part because the federal judge decided not to intervene in our press pass case with the state of Washington. And this was all breaking as we were on the air yesterday. So I want to go over it in a little more detail right now, because this, you know, this is not just about like me or Ari Hoffman or Jonathan Cho. I think this is a broader issue that's coming up across the country. But I say all the time that as upset as I am at politicians and these horrible decisions they make, they wouldn't be able to make it if the media didn't let them make these decisions. If the media actually held them accountable and told the truth about what their policies would do and covered these things in an unbiased fashion and had the criticality that really their position demands, I don't believe we would be in this position as a state. I think we would have a thriving economy. I don't think Amazon would have picked up and moved jobs. I don't think Starbucks would be leaving. The media is the culprit, because politicians are going to do what politicians do. Politicians have been corrupt, and not all of them, but many of them, since the beginning of time, and have looked out for their own self-interests and what's going to get them reelected. That's not a surprise. But the media is supposed to stand in the breach between them and you and say, you're not going to do this to citizens, without answering some really hard questions about it. And that's why this free press issue matters so much, and why we're going to continue to fight this denial. Me, Jonathan Cho, and Ari Hoffman. So basically, we had sought a temporary restraining order against the state of Washington's decision to deny us press passes at the beginning of the legislative session. That case went to a federal court in Tacoma. The judge decided he was not going to intervene, which basically means that for the rest of the week, you know, the last few days, most critical days of the legislative session, we are not going to have press passes to be able to cover the state house in the way that we need to cover it. Now, that doesn't mean the case is done. Catiff, who has taken this case on our behalf, put out a statement saying, we are not done with this fight. We strongly disagree with the court's decision on the injunction motion. And while we are not appealing it, given the short time left in the session, we will continue to litigate this case until we either prevail or exercise every viable legal option. Our goal is to get our clients the access they are entitled to by the Constitution as members of the press. And I agree with the decision from Catiff not to appeal the judge's decision earlier this week, because there's no point. I mean, the session would be done by the time an appeal is heard, and so they wouldn't have any relief to give us. Even if on appeal we were to win and they reverse this judge's decision, the session's over, and so how can they give us relief? They can't give us a press pass in that moment because the session's over. Now, one change in that would be if there were to be a special session for some reason. Like, let's say they can't get this income tax thing done and Bob Ferguson needs a special session. Then, yeah, then we would have a reason to appeal that decision. But for now, we're not going to. I want to play a couple snippets from court as we talk about the importance of, why are we fighting this fight? Why are we willing to take this fight as far as we need to take this fight? And what does it mean for you? So first of all, let me just say, the attorney for the state of Washington, they hired an outside law firm, as you know, in Seattle. So it's costing you a ton of money for the state to try to keep us from having press passes. She was so sanctimonious. It was all I could do in court to keep a straight face. And so I'm going to get to some of her clips in a moment. But I thought our attorney, Jackson Maynard, with the Citizen Action Defense Fund, made a remarkable argument before the court about what's at stake here.
We are here on an emergency motion for temporary restraining order in which we seek to challenge the denial of day press passes to my clients by the House of Representatives and the other defendants. In a nutshell, Your Honor, my clients are likely to succeed on the merits because the process used to award press passes by the defendants clearly violates the federal and state constitutional protections of freedom of the press, due process, and the state constitution's non-delegation doctrine. While the violation of these rights is sufficient to demonstrate irreparable harm, the fact the session ends March 12th compounds the emergency nature of this motion, as well as weighs in the balance of the equities in my client's favor. In the remaining 72 hours of the legislative session, the House will potentially be wrestling with a multi-billion-dollar budget and other legislation of great importance. My clients are the eyes and ears of the people in the legislative process. Their voices and opinions should not be excluded. The interest of the public in having a kaleidoscope of perspectives, some favorable, some critical, some neutral, so that the public can arrive at the truth, is absolutely fundamental here.
And I think that got to the heart of what we're trying to do. You know, the legacy media is serving a part of the population. That's fine. That part of the population that agrees with the Democrats in power, they deserve to have a voice too. They deserve to have news they want to read and information that they want to consume. But what about everybody else? And to shut out people because they have opinions and they might be conservative and they voice those opinions, then that's to shut out that part of the population. And so I thought Jackson Maynard really focusing on this is about citizens. This is about how can we serve citizens the best? And that should be the only consideration. But he also talked about the larger issue. And this goes for, frankly, you know, whatever sort of actions the president wants to take with the press corps and also states across the country that are wrestling with independent news versus mainstream media and whatever it is. At the center of this is the reality that we cannot allow the government to dictate who's a member of the press and who is not.
We now understand that the issue for the House is that Mr. Hoffman and Ms. Cruz participated in rallies in support of initiatives that are pending before the legislature. The problem with using, interpreting engaged in as opposed to being paid to participate in a political campaign, which my clients are not, but interpreting it to apply to if you attend a political rally, that runs afoul of the TGP case that we cite, which states that a reporter that attends partisan political events cannot be a basis to deny the pass. The court in that case, and that's a Ninth Circuit case, Your Honor, in which the district court did not grant the injunction. It was appealed, and the Ninth Circuit reversed that decision. To allow the government the source of permissible subjects for public debate would be to allow that government to control the search over the political truth. And that is what is at stake here in this case, and that is why the court should grant the motion.
Yeah, and that's why it is a much bigger issue. And it's why I've been so consistent on, you know, when the president of the United States, someone who I support politically, tries to keep the Associated Press out of the Oval Office for refusing to call the Gulf of America the Gulf of America. You know, it's just that you might not like something they say or their coverage, but when you pick and choose, then it becomes state media. Then you just become North Korea. And it's also why I'm in favor of a much looser interpretation for press access rules. Just behave yourself. If you write for a gun publication and you're a big 2A person, you got a blog on guns, and they're debating a bill down in Olympia, and it's about 2A, it's gonna hurt 2A rights. I think that that blogger ought to be able to go down there and get a press pass for the day and sit there and watch the activity and watch them take votes and report. What is the problem with that? And again, how many, should we go dig up every single reporter who put Black Lives Matter on their profile and say, oh, well, you know, every reporter who's gone to a women's rights march and say, well, you're not sufficiently a journalist. But because I was at a rally that I didn't get paid to attend, and because I say men aren't women, which is the women's rights issue of our generation, now I'm not a member of the press. You see the danger in this? Now, I mentioned the attorney for the state of Washington. So sanctimonious, I could hardly tolerate it. We'll play some clips.
They didn't apply for this week. They didn't apply for what they're asking for. And the idea that they're going to come to this court and that's going to be their application for a press pass is unprecedented. That's not how it works. So the kind of injunctive relief they're seeking here, they don't even have that basic predicate.
That was the most insane argument at the whole hearing. This attorney is arguing that because we didn't continue to apply for press passes every day after we were denied, that we have no case. Now, she actually got something wrong. She said they haven't asked for a press pass for this week. So if the judge, if you grant their motion, what are you granting? Because you can't overturn any decision because there's no decision to overturn. And she was corrected because I had, in fact, applied for a press pass every day this week. And she just hadn't been told that. She didn't know that. But the other two, Ari Hoffman and Jonathan Cho, they hadn't applied for press passes since 6 weeks ago when they were denied by the House and told, you're not journalists. And the obvious retort to the point she's making there is, why would they continue to waste their time and apply for press passes when you've denied them a press pass? The rules haven't changed. We're literally engaged in a case, in a court of law, to try to force you to give us. So why would the expectation be that in order to have a case, you have to continue to every day go online, apply for a press pass, and be denied? It makes absolutely no sense. Let's continue to, I want to pick apart. And this is why it just really, I'm not going to speak poorly about the judge in this case. Obviously, you know, the case is continuing to move forward. I will say in reading the ruling, it sounded like it was written before our arguments were even made, because she made some claims and statements that you know, our attorney addressed in court that were totally off base. And I don't think that those were really taken into consideration. So let's continue to listen to her.
They're not complicated. This idea of vagueness, these are all smart people. They disagree with it, but it's clear exactly what kind of stuff you do that makes you an act that the minute they ask for an appeal, they got their explanation to the degree it was not inherently obvious. Even when told why, they still kept saying, but why, because they don't agree that they are the things that their actions clearly demonstrate them to be.
Let me set that up and we'll play it again. So she's saying, and listen to the tone in her voice as we're sitting in the room. Like, these rules on who can have press passes and who can't, they're not hard. And a stupid person basically could understand it. And they're acting like they don't understand why they were denied. Can you play that again and just with the context?
They're not complicated. This idea of vagueness, these are all smart people. They disagree with it, but it's clear exactly what kind of stuff you do that makes you an act that the minute they ask for an appeal, they got their explanation to the degree it was not inherently obvious. Even when told why, they still kept saying, but why, because they don't agree that they are the things that their actions clearly demonstrate them to be.
They disagree that they are the things that their actions demonstrate them to be. I mean, what is that? How condescending is that? And yes, we disagree with the rules. We disagree with how the rules are being applied. That's why we're standing in a courtroom. Let me correct some of the things that this attorney said. Keep going.
They immediately obtained responses. Some responses happened within 30 minutes. And there was a back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And the back and forth ended on their side. Their questions were answered. There were no other questions left unanswered.
So she's talking about us appealing the denial of our press passes. So basically you go through an online database, type in, this is who I am, these are the days I want a press pass. I got an email saying you're denied. And then you can appeal and you can say, well, why am I denied? And then the chief of the court will respond with the rationale. And she's saying they got an explanation. All their questions were answered. That's not true. That's false. And the court had the information to show that. The reason I was denied is they said I was engaged in the development of public policy. I responded not once, not twice, but now four times asking, what public policy have I engaged in the development of? I have never, ever engaged in the development of public policy. I might support policy after it's been created and introduced. I might say, I support that bill. Or in the case of the initiatives, I support these initiatives. But I had no involvement in crafting the initiatives, in writing the initiatives. I had no involvement in crafting public policy. So their denial was based on a falsehood. I challenged them not once, not twice. And they never answered my question as to, I asked them directly, what public policy development have I been engaged in? And they never answered my question. And she's in court, in a court of law, saying they answered all of her questions. Not true. Let's keep going.
Do the guidelines have or define the terms like professional journalist or lobbyist or engaged in? Are there definitions in those guidelines?
Yes. I mean, I think there are, Your Honor. And again, this is docket 1-2. It's the that we filed with the removal. And it's exhibit C to Mr. Maynard's declaration, November 2025, Guidelines for Washington State Legislature Press Credentials. It talks about, for example, what does it mean to be a professional journalist? And this is subsection 2. It says, this means that reporting or shooting is your primary job, and that job is the source of most of your income.
Well, then that is me, right? Reporting is my primary job. That job is the source of all of my income. This is my full-time job, reporting and disseminating information to the public. So by her own statement, well, I qualify as a reporter, as a member of the press, but let's keep going.
The press must be independent from the government and from political parties.
I agree.
Their constituent groups and the many organizations which have a stake in the legislative proceedings. So there are examples of folks who, like these plaintiffs, are actors in the arena, but they're on the other side of the political divide, but they didn't apply because they understood that the criteria, they wouldn't satisfy the criteria.
Yeah, Two points there. So she says the media should be independent. Who's more independent than me? I work for myself. Truly independent. She said the media should be independent from political party. I'm an independent. I have always said I don't particularly like either political party very much. And when she says they should be independent from all these groups that might have an interest in what's happening in the legislature, there are two arguments that can be made there about us on this show. We have advertisement agreements with Project 42, Future 42, which we do on the show once a week, a segment that's sponsored by them. They pay us as advertisers. They pay the same rate as everyone else. They have no control over our content. They don't get to dictate what we say and what we don't say. And it's no different than the climate organizations that fund the Seattle Times to do climate reporting. So if you're going to deny me because we have an advertising agreement with Future 42, then you'd have to deny every single journalist at the Seattle Times for the same sort of thing. And then another advertiser of ours is the Rental Housing Association of Washington. You could argue that they have a stake in what happens in Olympia, but RHA is an advertiser. They pay the same advertising rate as any of our other advertisers, and they don't tell us what to say. We don't do any stories or reporting on their behalf. They don't influence at all what we talk about on the show. We let them advertise on our show because I tend to agree with most of the policy positions that they take. If some sort of left-wing group wanted to advertise on our show to build membership for their organization, I'd say no, because we don't align. So you can't say that I have any sort of, I don't get paid by any of these organizations, I don't get paid by Let's Go Washington. I just support the fact that men aren't women. Like, wow. I don't get paid by any political party except if they want to hire me to come and give a speech to them. I'm not going to do it for free. For any organization, whether it's some sort of trade group or some sort of chamber of commerce or a political party, you want me to come speak to you? I'm happy to. If the Democratic Party wants me to come speak to them, I'm happy to do that. I'm going to charge you for it because I'm not going to show up for free. I'm not going to spend time crafting a speech and getting ready for free. I'm not going to travel there for free. But no one tells me what to say. No one pays me to support any sort of policy. And so they can't argue I'm not a member of the press. 100% of my income is from being a political commentator and reporter. So this fight is not done. I think our arguments in our case are very obvious. I think we will prevail down the road. But for now, as far as the Democrats in the House of Representatives are concerned, we're not members of the press, and they can continue to push all of these bad policies because the members of the press that are there refuse to hold them accountable. All right, I'm gonna say it, Nicole. This is the best story we've ever done. You don't believe me. It's not the best story we've ever done.
It's amongst the best, for
it's
sure.
It's one of my favorite stories.
Okay, fair.
About media criticism that we've ever done. Good? Is that fair?
Fair.
Okay, it's coming up next. What a tease, right? First, March is the start of spring, and our outdoor to-do list is already growing at my house. I know for sure I need to reach out to my friends at Valentine Roofing. They already did a roof inspection for us and cleaned out our gutters, but I need them to do some exterior cleaning on our house so when we have friends over in the backyard, the back of our house and the side of our house doesn't look filthy dirty from all the storms that we had. So Valentine's going to do that for us. And if you do need a new roof right now, Valentine has a huge March promotion going on. Not only are they going to take care of you this year, but they've got next year covered. So this month only, get a free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. Then enjoy seasonal checkups and professional care to keep your new roof looking its best. Plus, they have very flexible financing options. So you can pay as low as just $159 a month. And the Valentine experience is guaranteed with every project. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. So if you're in need of a new roof, or maybe just you've got an outdoor to-do list, and that includes maybe some exterior cleaning or gutter inspection, roof inspection, gutter cleaning, reach out to our friends at Valentine. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. Call 206-ROOFING. Get your free estimate, 206-ROOFING. When are people going to accuse me of being in bed with the big bad roofing industry? Oh, Brandy's not a member of the press because she does commercials for Valentine Roofing. I mean, that's basically the argument that they're making. Anyone who advertises on the show, I'm absolutely in bed with the industry insiders. It's good stuff, really. All right, so you guys know this whole flock camera debate. It's these cameras that monitor traffic routes, and they can detect license plates, and they can help cities fight crime. And I've said I'm a big fan of them. I understand there's some privacy concerns. I'm not opposed to talking about privacy concerns with the Flock camera system. But we live in a state with very few police officers. And having some sort of technology that can assist police officers in fighting crime is not only a good thing, it's absolutely necessary. And these Flock camera systems have resulted in police arresting homicide suspects, in police arresting sexual assault suspects, robbery suspects. They even identified one of the Antifa goons who assaulted me with help from the Flock camera system. So it's a very, very valuable tool. Now, it became a point of controversy recently over ICE. So I believe it started in the city of Redmond or Renton, where there was a belief, or Auburn, it was Auburn. There was a belief that the cameras and the data captured by the cameras were being used by ICE, okay, for immigration activities. Well, if you don't want that, there's a very easy way to just turn it off. Like, you can say, we're going to share this data with other agencies so they can utilize this whole camera system, or we're not going to share it with other agencies. You just say, we're just not going to do it. But instead of that, they're like, oh my gosh, no, let's just get rid of the cameras altogether. Because one instance in one city, maybe ICE used it for something. And so it created this whole just domino effect of all these liberal cities saying, oh, we need to reevaluate Flock cameras. And eventually that ended up becoming the subject of a bill in Olympia, Senate Bill 6002. Now, I will say this bill has gotten significantly better as it's gone through the legislature. I think initially the point of this was they wanted to put so many restrictions on the Flock cameras that cities just wouldn't use them and, you know, oh, because immigration or whatever it is. But they made some amendments so that exempted the footage from public disclosure. I think that's great. That that addresses a privacy issue, right? Limits the data retention to 21 days. Initially, they wanted the data retention to only be 72 hours, which would have just been a total mess and not useful at all. So now it's 21 days. I was also amended in the House to allow for it to be used for the investigation of gross misdemeanors. Previously, it had just been felonies. And then it does bar public agencies from using the cameras for immigration enforcement, which, again, I think you should let immigration enforcement use it because I agree with rounding up criminal illegal aliens. But in our state, that's to be expected, right? So I'm not overly perturbed by the changes that went into Senate Bill 6002. However, regardless of that bill, cities across the state continue to have meetings and to weigh the pros and cons of the Flock camera system. And there are multiple cities who have decided that they're not going to use the cameras anymore, absent really any evidence that it's being used in some widespread way by Immigration and Customs Enforcement or used in some widespread way wrongly against citizens. So why are they doing that? Well, as in most cases, it's because the media coverage has been completely unhinged. The media coverage has been absolutely biased. It's made a mountain out of a molehill. And now citizens are going to be robbed. Their police departments are going to be robbed of a valuable crime-fighting tool that will keep them more safe because of bad media coverage. So let's talk about this story from King 5 News. Here's the introduction.
This Flock automatic license plate reading camera that's mounted off of Redmond Way pinged back in August for a vehicle that was associated with someone with a felony warrant. It wasn't until Redmond police had a man in custody and in handcuffs that they realized they had the wrong guy.
Oh, they arrested the wrong guy. That's never happened before. Okay, look, I don't think it's ever good when police arrest the wrong person. But basically, as she sets up there, you got a little camera, detected a car they were looking for associated with a wanted felon. They went and found the car, found out it was the wrong guy. So here's the King 5 story. Features a nice looking guy. Doesn't he look like a nice man? Got a little half zip there, a little sweater, got some glasses, just looks like a normal, nice, clean cut. Yes. So it says Redmond police officers surrounded the home of Thor Andrews Sr. on an August afternoon, moving quickly toward him in his driveway before placing him in handcuffs. Drone footage captured by the department shows the encounter lasting only seconds before Andrews is restrained. But officers had the wrong man. According to police records, the arrest stemmed from an alert generated by a Flock safety license plate reader nearby. The system had flagged Andrew Silver, 2012 Ford Fusion, as being associated with his son, who shares the same name and was wanted on a felony warrant. The vehicle, however, is registered to Andrews Sr., not his son, Andrews Jr., and records show Redmond police were aware of that detail. So let's play a little clip of the interview they did with Thor Andrews Sr.
Now I'm really distraught about even driving this vehicle. Hurt my shoulder, hurt my elbow, my wrists. I was explaining to them that you have the wrong person.
You've got the wrong person, and yet they viciously detained me. Now, to set this up, again, you've got a flock camera that identified a license plate associated with a person with a valid felony warrant who actually has the same name as the registered owner of the vehicle because it's his son. He's a junior, not a senior. Redmond police get to the home. They're trying to sort out, is this our suspect or is this not our suspect? And according to this guy and according to the portrayal from King 5, he's like, oh my gosh, this was a horrible, horrible situation. I just politely explained to them that is, in fact, not me. That is my son. And it was really traumatizing for me. Well, let's see. What King 5 News did not show you, they showed the drone footage. They did not show the body camera video of this encounter. Let's watch it.
Get your f***ing ass hands off me, motherfucker. I'm senior, motherfucker. Get off of me. You make a big mistake. Go ahead. Tase me. I hope you f***ing do. You f***ing pieces of f***ing s***. F*** you, man. How's that sound? You fucking faggot, bitch-ass motherfucking cunts. You guys are fucking pieces of
junior.
Can you? I'm dead. Hold on. The portrayal that King 5's portrayal once, real quick.
Now I'm really distraught about even driving this vehicle. Hurt my shoulder. Hurt my elbow. My wrists. I was explaining to them that you have the wrong person.
What really happened?
Get your f***ing ass hands off me, motherfucker. I'm senior, motherfucker. Get off of me. You make a big mistake. Go ahead, tase me. I hope you f***ing do.
I'm dead.
You f***ing pieces of f***ing f*** you, man. F*** you. How's that sound? You f***ing faggot. Bitch ass motherfucking cunts. You guys are fucking pieces of
junior.
I'm dead. They didn't show that video at all. And I have to believe they have it. Because in their report, they obtained video from the Redmond Police Department that they used in the report. It was drone footage. But you mean to tell me that when they went to obtain that video from Redmond PD, they didn't get all the video? They just got the drone video? And then they show him as this just nice man. Gosh, I'm my zip up and my glasses and I was traumatized. And they took me into custody and it was this total case of mistaken identity that wasn't totally unwarranted. And then you go to the video, is F you, anti-gay slurs, the most disgusting, vile language, and he's in his wife beater and all this stuff. I mean, that. Look at the side-by-side, just the side-by-side itself. That is, ladies and gentlemen, the legacy news. That is the problem. Not to mention, even if, and I have to believe that if he had been the person he was being to King 5 and had come out and just explained to officers, oh no, I'm senior, that's my son, I don't think he would have been detained. I don't think we would have had a problem. They would have probably said, well, where's your son? And gone about that. And by the way, when they confirmed, yes, in fact, this is senior, not junior, the person we're looking for, they released him. It's not like they brought him to the station. And look, it's not the first time in the history of the world that police have detained someone that they think might be a suspect in a crime and then had to release them. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. It has literally nothing to do with the flock camera system. That kind of stuff would happen before the flock camera system existed. That sent them to the home of a vehicle associated with a wanted felon who happens to have the same name as the guy they pulled out of the vehicle. I don't really think that's that big of a mistake. But then when King 5 News gets the story, and oh my gosh, the guy with his half zip and his glasses and they hurt me and I'm traumatized. Well, maybe if you hadn't been screaming and yelling at them and resisting, they could have sorted it out much more quickly. So false controversy over something that happens that's unfortunate but isn't a big deal has nothing at all to do with the flock camera system. There's a million different ways police could have wound up at that driveway pulling the car over. Maybe an officer saw the car, pulled him over. And so you create a controversy over something where there's no controversy. You misrepresent it to the public by painting this guy as some saint with a half zip who just got pulled out and it's no big deal. When in reality, probably, and I can't prove this, probably hid the video that made him look bad. Instead, chose the video that had no audio from above. And thank God, a citizen alerted us to this and said, hey, this story didn't seem right to me. And so I requested the video from the Redmond Police Department, and look at what I found, and sent it to us. So we could do, you know, half of our job is correcting the crappy work of the legacy news, or building on the insufficient reporting of the legacy news. So now you've got cities across the state, because of reporting like this, that are getting rid of a valuable crime-fighting tool. For nothing. Absolutely insane.
Can I just say those officers are so controlled in their response patient to him being ridiculous.
He calls him, and I thought the media cared about anti-gay slurs. He just left and right. I think that story would have been much different if they had quoted what he was telling officers in the moment. Instead, he said, no, I mean, I was explaining to them, you have the wrong person. And he did very briefly say, I'm senior, not junior. And then he proceeded on his disgusting tirade. Just everything I'm you need to know right there about the legacy news.
For a possible update. But his son, not a good dude. I've looked him up.
Not a good guy.
Not a good dude.
Not a good guy. Redmond police were trying to get him off the street. And you know what? Yeah. Talking to family members might help them locate him. Unfortunate situation. I would hate to be taken into custody or even pulled over when they were looking for someone else, but it happens. And it happens regardless of whether we have a flock camera system. I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did, because I have never laughed as hard as when Nicole first showed me that video this morning. Very good stuff.
Needed that today.
I needed that today. Gosh, that's good stuff. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, also on the immigration front. First, our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington are the people you want to reach out to if you are a landlord here. Maybe you've got one unit or a dozen units, and you're just having a really hard time navigating the rules and regulations that the state is throwing in front of you. So there's a couple of things you can do by becoming a member of RHA. They can help you on an individual basis, sort of one-on-one, make sure you got the right paperwork, you're up to date with what all the rules and policies and new laws are that are coming down. And then they also, I think it's a really great kind of social club for people who are interested in housing policy or who are landlords. They have a ton of events across the state, and they do it right, I will say. I even get invited to some of the events, even though I'm not a member, and I have spoken to a couple RHA gatherings as well. And then on the backside, they're down in Olympia this time of year, advocating on your behalf, trying to make sure that the lawmakers down there know the impact that their policies will have on mom-and-pop landlords. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, speaking of virtue signaling over ICE, so the new socialist mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson, very much falling in line with the Democrat narrative around immigration and customs enforcement, saying they have no place here.
I am furious at the federal government's abuse of power. It is unacceptable to kidnap people who are simply going about their lives. There is no place for this in Seattle.
Okay. So they announced in February that they were going to be doing a couple things. One of them, forcing Seattle police officers to basically document and report back on ICE activity as if they don't have anything better to be doing. And then the city is installing this signage. So basically on city property, saying that it can't be used for immigration staging or anything like that, which I think they know that you don't want them there. Like, that's pretty clear by your sanctuary city designation that you don't like them. You're not going to cooperate with them or whatever it is. But nope, we got to have our signs and we got to put our signs up. And she's so proud of these signs. So, of course, signs cost money. And installing signs cost money. And it might not be like the biggest expense in the world, but it turns out that they are taking money from other transportation projects and might have to delay transportation projects to pay for the purchase and installation of these anti-ICE signs. This is from a summary and fiscal note of, it was from a meeting yesterday that Seattle City Council had. So it says it's an ordinance relating to civil immigration enforcement, prohibiting civil immigration enforcement staging on all real property that is city owned and controlled, and adding a new chapter to Seattle Municipal Code. So it talks about the proposed legislation, includes 656 signs that will cost $45,000, blah, 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 blah. But you go down to the bottom of that, and it's like, okay, how are we going to pay for this? Because the city of Seattle, like many blue jurisdictions, is having quite the budget crunch right now because they pay for stuff like this. Gee, why are they having a budget crunch? It says, to the extent that appropriations made in the 2026 adopted budget support other activities and for which SDOT cannot find efficiencies or savings to otherwise support, SDOT, Seattle Department of Transportation, may have to delay or defer projects or programs to free up funding for the signage costs that will be incurred pursuant to this legislation. So they're putting totally performative anti-ice signs ahead of transportation projects. That's how far off the deep end they've gone. Signs that will do nothing. Signs that will deter nothing. Signs that the federal government doesn't even have to abide by. Also, you can make a point that we don't support ICE. ICE, which, by the way, in Seattle has gotten child predators off the streets, convicted murderers off the streets, rapists off the streets. You should be groveling at their feet and thanking them for helping to keep the city safe when you're 700 officers short. And instead, you're buying signs to the tune of $50,000, even more the cost to install them. And you're going to take money from transportation projects to do it. It's absolutely insane. And then I don't know how to make sense of this, and so I'm just going to read it. I don't even really know how to introduce it to you. So it says, please describe any financial costs or other impacts of not implementing the legislation. So they have this sort of fiscal assessment. It's the fiscal note tied to any sort of policy. And in there, it has the costs, and then they compare it to the cost of not doing it. Like, what does it cost if we don't do this? So it says, not implementing this legislation could contribute to an environment that limits access and safety to public spaces, especially among Seattle's undocumented immigrants. It says, please describe how this legislation may affect any city departments other than the originating department. The primary departments involved in this legislation will be the city attorney's office and the Department of Finance and Administrative Services. However, there may be need for other city departments, most notably Seattle Parks and Recreation, Seattle City Light, and Seattle Public Utilities, to assist with signage on city properties prohibiting staging. So now, in order to do this virtue signaling thing, they need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 city departments to be involved in this. And then make sense of this. It says resiliency. There's literally a little note in these fiscal notes for the city of Seattle for any piece of legislation where you have to talk about the climate change implications, okay? So any, first of all, it's just stupid to have that. But a sane person would say none, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, it would say none. Instead, it says, this legislation will help preserve and cultivate the city's status as a welcoming city by preventing an environment of fear and intimidation. This will preserve and potentially improve the social and community ties that provide resilience in the face of climate change. How do you even keep a straight face typing something like that? Well, they're like, hey, we have to have some sort of nexus here to climate change. Oh, yes, this will preserve and potentially improve the social and community ties that provide resilience in the face of climate change. Absolutely dead. I'm absolutely dead. How do you even? It is a clown show. And then they're like, why are we short on money? Let's tax businesses for more money. And it's like, well, you know, exhibit A. All right. Speaking of wasting money, let's get to our second edition of Unbelievable. But we won't go too far. Staying in the city of Seattle with the socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, when she was elected, one of the very first things she said, because they're facing all these deficits and all these problems because of the story we just did, is that they need new taxes.
We will need to pursue new progressive revenue in order to fund our priorities and make sure that we're delivering services to the people of Seattle. There's several progressive tax options I proposed as part of my platform, and so we're going to have city staff looking into developing those into legislation. Don't know yet exactly what the timeline's going to be on that.
Yeah, and so it can be new taxes that the city implements, but they can also go to the voters. And as you know, the voters of the city of Seattle are very generous when it comes to approving new levies or expanding existing levies. And they don't care that usually they approve money for things that never even work out or don't do anything, like homelessness or whatever it is. They're like, oh, this sounds really nice. Yes, you can have some more money. And so in that sense, I really don't have a lot of sympathy for the electorate in Seattle because they continue to approve new taxes on themselves. And the latest new tax that the city of Seattle wants is a new levy to support their public library system. From Como News, Mayor Katie Wilson proposes $410 million Seattle Public Library levy to the city council. So they would approve it to send it to voters, right? It says Seattle voters could decide next year whether to dramatically expand dedicated funding for the Seattle Public Library under a proposed $410 million library levy that Mayor Katie Wilson transmitted to the city council on Tuesday. The proposed 2026 replacement levy would fund the library system for 7 years from 2027 through 2033, replacing an expiring $219 million levy. So they want twice as much money for our public library system. She said, Seattle is a city of readers. From toddlers discovering their first stories to seniors finding connection, lifelong learning, our libraries belong to everyone. The only thing they're used for is people who watch porn. How many, I mean, that's true. How many stories have we done on homeless people using public libraries and computers to watch porn and J.O.? That's the truth. Downtown library, I'm not saying they don't have some sort of function and purpose for members of the public, but the need for a robust library system is declining, not increasing. Yet they want to double the amount of money through the levy that they're giving to a library system that's hardly utilized. Not to mention, repeatedly, they've said they can't do anything to stop the homeless from going in there and using computers to look at porn and J.O. So yeah, Seattle, by all means, approve the new library levy.
I mean, drag
just don't complain to us.
Drag story time.
Drag, yeah, they need a place to hold their drag story hour. That's true. Where else are you going to do that? You know what? I changed my mind. Approve the levy. Yeah, approve they need it. A place to do their drag queen story hour. Yeah. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. We'll go over to New York City and see how they're trying to destroy their economy. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy you want to reach out to if you're looking to sell your home. One of our wonderful now subscribers, Preston, he was a longtime listener, but hadn't become a paid subscriber. But then he heard about Wes Jones on our show, decided to reach out. He was in a pickle, needed to sell his home pretty quick because they were building a home nearby and just needed the financial boost from it. And he says selling with Wes turned out better than he even thought.
We had tons of showings. We had 3 offers in one day. So kind of got a little bit of a bidding war. One came over asking, went with that one. I actually had said that I've kind of a cheapskate, so I've never been a member. So I said, if Wes gets me over asking, I'll become a member. So I became a member.
Oh, because Wes got you over asking? Wow. Nice. Thanks, Wes. I'll have to give Wes a little kickback. But, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship, really. But one of the other things Preston said that I think really resonated with me, and I hear this from a lot of people who use Wes to sell their home, is that he treated Preston like his most important client. He's like, I know he was dealing with other people and would sell these big homes in Bellevue and stuff. He said, but he treated me like I was his most important client and the only client he had. And he said he just loved that about him. So sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So thankfully, we're not the only state where things are just a little bit nutty. New York City, under its socialist mayor, Mamdani, wants to raise the minimum wage to $30 an hour. Right now it's 17. So that would be almost double for those of you not proficient in math or who learned your math skills from Washington's public school system. $30 an hour. From the New York Post, lefty New York City council members proposed a record-breaking $30 per hour minimum wage bill Tuesday, a measure that would nearly double the Big Apple's current baseline pay. The proposed pay increases in the bill would unfold in gradual increments by 2030 for large employers and 2031 for smaller businesses. Employers with upward of 500 employees would lift worker salaries to $20 an hour by 2027, with steady increases every year to 2030. Which is like right around the corner when it'll end at $30 an hour. Look, I don't have to tell you guys, you already know how this works. You force a company to double someone's pay, they're going to cut their workforce in half. They're just going to lay people off because you can't, especially for businesses that have very little wiggle room, you can't just manifest more money overnight. You can't do that unless you raise prices and double prices. And then that impacts the very type of people who you're trying to lift out of poverty with a policy like that. And of course, you know, they already know what's going to happen because Seattle's minimum wage hike to $21.30 has been an absolute disaster. So just looking at the map in terms of where wages are the highest, not a surprise. The bluer your state, the higher your wages. And we also know what that did. So a lot of the policies that they had here, for instance, they wanted to increase pay and benefits for gig workers and for like Uber Eats drivers and stuff. And what happened? The Uber Eats drivers said, I'm making less money. Fewer people are ordering because all the fees associated. So the people they were trying to help here with those policies made less money as a result. And the exact same thing happened in California when they increased pay for fast food workers. They had fewer jobs. They lost 18,000 jobs in the fast food sector in California. And so it kind of harkens back to the top of the show where I say it doesn't take a rocket scientist. And we don't have to guess. Like this stuff isn't, we're not guessing. We're just telling you this is exactly what has happened when these policies have passed before. And so you doing the same thing that other places has done is not going to yield a different result. Same with you target out California trying to target billionaires for taxation, the billionaires fled. Gee, let's just apply that logic to what's happening here with millionaires. The millionaires are going to flee, and the billionaires are going to flee for that matter. And so the same thing with minimum wage. And it's like, I'm, you know, this whole idea of a living wage, I do believe that if you're working full time in the United States of America and you've got a two income household, that you should be able to afford the basics. But there's so many things that goes into that. And progressive policies are inflationary. If you really care about you're the middle class and you're suffering, the last thing you should do is vote for a progressive or, God forbid, a socialist, because their policies, the data shows, are inflationary. They'll increase the cost of everything you buy. The gas is a good example. They're losing their minds right now over President Trump and Iran raising gas prices, and it has, but they have no complaints when the Climate Commitment Act raises our gas prices and when taxes and fees raise our gas prices here. So it's just, it's all, when everything's about politics, that's when a society loses its way. If we can't just say, hey, you know, unreasonable increases in gas aren't a good thing, regardless of what political party contributed to it. But we just can't do that. And the media can't do it either. It's absolutely outrageous. All right. Do you want to talk about the SAVE Act here, Nicole, a little bit? I guess I can talk about it in our subscriber poll and get to it. I don't know what the deal is in the Senate with the SAVE Act. So there's this whole debate between a standing filibuster versus a regular filibuster. And in the Senate, the Republican leader doesn't seem eager to, like, just talk, to make Democrats just talk and talk and talk and actually have a true filibuster. And I don't get it with the SAVE Act. I mean, the president has said that he doesn't want to sign in the SAVE Act, in case you're not familiar, the SAVE Act would require voter ID. And I think that that's a no-brainer. 80% of Americans across the ideological threshold think that you should have to show voter ID. And Democrats used to believe that, too. It's not controversial until Republicans under Trump wanted to do it. And I have to believe if you're really that opposed to it, there's a reason. There's something that you're trying to hide, and there's something that you don't want to be exposed. So we'll see what happens in the Senate. But President Trump has said, I'm not doing anything until you do that. So it might force their hand a little bit. I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe that's sort of unnecessary? Or do you believe President Trump should refuse to sign any other bill until the SAVE Act is sent to his desk? Yes or no? Nicole, anything. Nothing happens until he gets the SAVE Act.
Yeah, that makes me very nervous. So I don't like making promises, statements that you might come back on, because I do believe there are other things that he wants to get done that he's not just going to throw away because the SAVE Act's not on his desk. But maybe.
I also have to say no, because if we lose, if the common sense side loses the midterms, then they're not going to accomplish anything. So you potentially have, what, 6 months, really, to push through a policy agenda. And so I think anything you want to get done, you need to be getting done. And to hold it up over one thing that I admittedly believe is very important, but I think that would be a mistake. I have to agree. But our subscribers disagree with us. 77% say yes, you do support the president refusing to sign anything else until the SAVE Act gets to his desk. Let's see. Megan White says, I don't like games, mostly because it's always twisted by the media. Ted said it should do as he said. So they should do as he said. Let's see. RC, Thune is screwing around. He needs to pull the talking filibuster back into the fold and run it that way. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed with a talking filibuster, so it does work. Casey and Seebeck, the SAFE Act is instrumental in our democracy. And can I also say about Casey? Can I tell you a nice story about Casey? I'll save it for the end of this comment. Let me read some comments on this first. Let's see. Spear, oh fear. If we can't trust our voting system, then we can't have a functioning democracy. And I do agree that restoring integrity in our voting system is probably one of the most important issues. And there's so many things that would be maybe fixed as a result of requiring voting ID. And I'm not saying I think Washington will become a red state or even will be substantially different in the outcome of elections. But I think a lot of Republicans have been led to believe that our elections are rigged. And so if you take this element out of it, maybe those people who just don't even vote because they don't want to vote will come out and vote. And that could be very, very beneficial. Jen said, I'm torn on this one. It's such a one-sided issue. They should be pushing it to pass somehow. Yeah, it is a one-sided issue. Everybody's on one side of it. And so it just doesn't make sense.
And when you get this fiery about it, then everybody just backs further into their corners and you get nowhere.
One more from Dennis. No, I don't like that kind of action. Sometimes you have to chug along, fighting for what you think is right, but don't push all of the other trains off the track. I tend to agree with that, Dennis. I got to tell this story about Casey and Seebeck really quick.
Okay.
So we did for Stake of the Union with Ari Hoffman at KVI, which was so fun. Casey and Seebeck was there, and he's one of our awesome viewers, and we were chatting with him, and he gave me a present. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. You don't have to give me anything. And I open it up, and it's three Sean Kemp rookie cards. So remember I told the story very about nice how we were talking about, yes, we were talking about the Sonics. And I used to, before I ever even knew where Seattle was on a map, I used to collect Sean Kemp cards because my brothers collected Michael Jordan cards. And so I collected Sean Kemp cards, and I had this massive collection. And so I have this like special place in my heart for Sean Kemp and the Sonics. But in the third grade, I like gave them all away at school to a boy I liked. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I regret that so much. And so Casey had a collection, and he handpicked a couple cards out of his collection and gave them to me.
And he wrapped them. I love the wrapping.
The wrapping was one of our undivided mailers for our merch.
He had recrafted his own little envelope just for those.
Yes, I put them up. We have this little, Mike collects like signed baseball cards. And so we put them up, and I like was teary-eyed. I was like, that is so nice. So that is so nice, Casey. It's going to make me cry.
Really quick, just say the weirdness that you ended up in Seattle, and then you've said this before, I think, but Miranda had a
Miami Dolphins starter jacket and collected Brett Favre stuff.
Yeah.
And then ended up in Miami.
So
it must
bizarre.
Have been subconscious. Like, we just ended up in the cities of these weird things we collected when we were little for no apparent reason. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, our friend Dave Taylor at First Mark Insurance is great. He was in the studio talking to us not long ago when we were discussing all the different services they offer. And it's not only, I think a lot of people use First Mark Insurance for their home and their cars and whatever sort of toys you might have. But I also use First Mark for my business. And I think one of the nice things is they're local. They're a local company. And so they know what your business is dealing with from a political perspective. And they're going to try like hell to make sure that you get the best insurance rates. They also know, you know, some businesses are contending with a crime crisis, and there's all these questions about, do I report this? Do I not report it? What does it do to my insurance? So they live here. And this is, they've been doing this for a long time. And so they can come actually to your business on site and make sure that they are getting you insurance that really meets your needs. And then you just sort of have a friend as a business that's going through the same things that you are. And so I think that's one of the big benefits I know for us of having First Mark Insurance handle our insurance needs as a company. So start by taking the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. They can save you a ton of money, whether you do use them for personal insurance or business insurance. Robin says they're saving her $100 a month. $1,200 a year. And we just hear stories like that all the time. So there's a ton of members of the Undivided family who are members of the First Mark family. There's a reason. First Mark's the best. We love it. Exceptional service. FirstMarkInsurance.com. All right. Let's get to some comments from the
live. First of all, do you see Miranda's comment? Hilarious.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Sorry. Miranda says, Dan Marino cards, not Brett Favre cards. LOL, Brett Favre was a Green Bay Packer. I'm sorry, I just misremembered.
I thought that was just like an extra ad. I mean, I love that Miranda had to put he was a Packer.
Sorry, I mean Dan Marino. I said Brett Favre. I meant Dan Marino. I'm sure a bunch of people were screaming at the screens.
No, I just thought you were saying, oh, those were her two things. I didn't even think that.
No. It was Dan Marino cards.
Got it.
Thank you, Miranda. On Howard Schultz moving to Florida. Bill Biz, little $20 super chat. Thank you. Just viewed a Como News 11 a.m. poll on how many people favored the millionaire's tax. 86% of respondents opposed it. It's always amazing that those sentiments never seem to translate to the ballot box of state legislators. And I think it depends what platform are those polls on. You know, if it's on X, that poll is going to be skewed to the right, right? If it's like on their website, I also think Como News, of all the TV stations, is further to the right. It's still not on the right, but so they might have more of a conservative audience compared to like a King Five.
I also think that people watching the news, paying attention to the news, are, I mean, whether you're critiquing it or what, but you're more in tune and you're thinking more clearly like we are. But
I agree.
Liberals that just check the D box are not paying attention.
On Blue Sky.
I
agree. I think if you're an informed news consumer, and I'm not calling voters stupid, but I do think there's voters who are apparently Nicole is.
Nice.
I do think there's people who are detached.
Yes.
And good for them. I would love to be detached. I say that all the time. But I think for people who are really into it and you know, actually out there pursuing news and information, I do think they tend to understand that this isn't really about millionaires. It's about an income tax on all of us. Sarge, a lot of super chats today. I'll read other non-super chats too, but wow, you guys are just
throwing money at you.
Just throwing money at me today. Sergeant Pickles, for the first time, the wife agreed to discuss a real exit plan. Family has lived in Washington for a century, but I will not be a wage slave to the people who hate me. And that's a sentiment. I mean, I look forward to talking to Zach Abraham this week on Swamp Watch.
Leave.
Because he said if the millionaire's tax passes, he's going to redomicile. And I think he means it because he was on a whole big rant on X about this yesterday.
And you have a couple years, right?
So yeah, you have a few years to make a decision. And Mike will kind of be retired by then. Well, semi-retired. I'm sure he'll do something.
We can
we'll see.
Still talk about Washington and live in Florida.
Can we, though? I don't think I want to be that person. I think I'm here to stay. But Michelle, I agree with you on this, but you also need to lay blame at these millionaires fleeing over this tax. The heads of Amazon, Starbucks, and Microsoft are the same who donated to these Washington politicians. And I've called them out before. I've called out Microsoft for opposing, you know, some of the Let's Go Washington initiatives and totally working against their own interests. Amazon gave in to the whole, you know, climate thing and radical gender thing. And when you give a mouse a cookie, what do I say all the time? Most important book ever written in the history of time, besides the Bible, I'm sorry, I don't want to offend anyone, is if you give a mouse a cookie, because they just, you know, they want to placate them here and hope, okay, don't be mean to us. We helped you with the climate stuff. Don't be mean to us. You know, we let our employees use they, them pronouns, and then they screw you over anyway. You're still the enemy. So 100%. Rick Johnson, I'd like to see how Bob would answer the question, are you intentionally destroying Washington State? Well, the good news is
he wouldn't answer it. That's the answer to that.
He would say, Brandy, you're just obsessed, with me. The good news is I can still go down to Olympia and go to leadership press conferences if they're held in the Senate or Bob Ferguson press conferences. So I don't think that they will.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Hey, look, Bob, I got two compliments for Bob Ferguson today. Can I? You want me to give them to him?
Go for it.
Bob Ferguson, I have two compliments for you today.
Wow, you're really having to think.
What was the one? Oh, you have no problem letting me in press conferences and answering my questions, even though sometimes you are mean to me when you answer my question and a little condescending. And then I also, I don't want to put anybody's personal business out there, but there was a state lawmaker whose wife had a serious medical issue. And he's from Eastern Washington. And the governor was like, within minutes, he had the governor's plane. The governor used his plane to fly him. And I don't know if it was the governor's call, but obviously at the end of the day, it's the governor's plane. And so, and it was a Republican lawmaker.
Wow.
And flew him over there so he could see his wife for a serious medical issue, and within a minute. And so I thought that was very nice. Sometimes things transcend politics. Those are my two nice things to say about Bob today.
Okay.
Okay.
It balanced. We had a couple negatives, a couple positives.
Sure. Okay. On me being denied access to the House floor, James with a $50 suit, actually $49.99.
I know. I wonder why we weren't worth the extra penny.
Oh, come on. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. He's going to take it back. Brandy, thank you for the show today. Your live last night hit home. We as a community, Elon said, if you take $500 from a working person and give $100 to five lazy people, you lose one voter but gain five others. It's the business model of Washington State Democrats. Yeah, that's a good point. Moon Goddess, getting denied press pass is the beginning of all of us losing our rights. It starts small, podcasters and taking our freedom to choose who we listen to. Yeah, and I'm not going anywhere. I mean, here's the other thing that I think is interesting that they maybe haven't thought through. Mm-hmm. If they really want to keep me, you know, is the idea to push me further toward the political arena? But I would think what they're trying to do is basically, you know, they want me not to engage in politics so that I can get a press pass, like not do these things, because what they're doing is just going to engage me more in the political process. I actually don't think that's a good thing for them.
In this case, I don't know that they're being that strategic.
You think they just hate me?
Well, I think one person in particular,
yeah,
is being very spiteful.
Lori Jenkins.
Yes.
Yeah, House Speaker Lori Jenkins.
Because no one else has jumped on board with this. The Senate's like, you know, if it was real strategic, she would have got people on board with her.
Yeah.
But it's just her.
And I even heard from House Democratic members like, yeah, you should have a press pass. It's no big deal. Some of them have been on our show. You know who I ran into when I was down there on Monday? Rep. Roger Goodman, who's a Democrat on the Public Safety Committee. And we had that really spicy interview. Really spicy.
It ended fine, but we've been pretty hard on it.
Yeah, and I go, Rep. Goodman, I said, I haven't had you on for a spicy chat anymore. He's like, I know, we need to do that. I love doing that. I was like, see, what's the problem?
You know, isn't it funny that the two that we are maybe toughest on, which would be Sean Scott and Roger Goodman, are willing to come on the show?
Yeah, because why not?
Interesting.
What's the worst that could happen? Although Sean Scott did have some viral clips that were all over national news about saying Cuba's a good example of socialism. But I think he's like, I agree.
Still like, I mean,
and I talked to Sean Scott down there.
I
talked to Sean down there when I was there, and I thought it was funny because I was over on the Republican wings and he came over and I think his colleagues were like, why is Sean talking to Brandy? Anyway.
Which is so funny. Yeah, it's one of those things where you're a nice person.
I am a nice person.
I don't understand this vitriol.
Dory was really good at this too. And I never understood why people didn't get this about Dory. Mm-hmm. If you were willing to come on and go tit for tat with him, he would give you so much more of the benefit of the doubt the next time a story came up, and he'd respect you so much more. And the fact that they don't get that, and it's like, it's actually worse for you if you don't come on. You know what I mean?
You can't come on and defend your position.
Right.
Then what does that say about your position?
It's not very good.
It's not good.
Yes. All right. On lawmakers wanting to regulate Flock and then this crazy King 5 story, Merwin Wren, legacy media knows the law of primacy. People remember what they see and hear first. Mm-hmm. Play to emotions to win the week. Leftists are very vulnerable. Sergeant Pickles, it was a mostly peaceful, wrongful detention. Yeah.
I'm almost convinced that they don't even know the harm they're doing. Some of them do. I think in a larger sense, they might.
Let's do this. Let's reach out to Redmond PD and ask them for only the video that was already provided to King 5 News. Because I want to see what video King 5 had and made a conscious decision not to air.
Okay. I mean, we could do that, definitely. I don't think that, just with the drone video, you can see that there's something going on. I think they knew. They went.
Well, but let's just prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Sorry, we're taking forever on this today. On Seattle, maybe delaying transportation projects for anti-ice signage. Matthew Cook says virtue signaling can be a profitable business. Couple other super chats. Veronica Ray, $49.99. Is there something special with that number today? Just because I support you and your show. Thank you. Erica, I was wanting to know what the bill number is that Bob Hasegawa introduced yesterday. It is Senate Bill 6358 on corporations and ballot measures. Senate Bill 6348. Go to ledge.wa.gov, type that in. And then Tribe Willoughby. No comment, just a super chat. Well, that's super nice.
Thank you.
That is so nice. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, speaking of our friend Zach Abraham, who's about to jump ship. He said if he left the state, though, he wouldn't stop advertising on our show. So
that's
I do appreciate that.
I think
that.
He was
that's
just
going to
change where he paid taxes.
We'll see. But Zach is having one of his free live webinars on April 2nd. It's their Cutting Through the Market Noise live webinar. During it, they'll talk about the real fundamentals of value investing, risks associated with AI, crypto, and tech, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Pacific. It's totally free. You can register right now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And it can be kind of a passive listening thing. If that's like in the middle of your workday, you can register, turn it on and listen to what he has to say. You don't have to ask questions or anything like that. And if you can't make it, you can schedule your own free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Right. On Gutfeld yesterday, he had a monologue on the show where he was talking about the issue that's very relevant to us, the legacy news versus independent media and public trust. And he says old media has not earned and is not worthy of your trust.
It's a reminder of what everyone should do when they hear the opinions of anyone in the media. Go back and check their opinions on other things because they're probably just as stupid. The border, trans, crime. Come on, people. They were wrong on everything. They make Jim Cramer look like Miss Cleo. And that creates a new world in which it feels like Trump no longer has the traditional opposition in the shape of the Democrats or the media. It's not that they don't exist. It's that they don't matter. They squandered all their credibility by being wrong on everything. And because of that, you are no longer required to listen to them. Because before, they lied to you, they betrayed you, they tried to ruin your life. So it feels like there's a new duopoly brewing, and it's shaping up between Trump and independent media, what has replaced legacy media in the role of the questioner of those in power. I'm talking about Greenwald, Tim Dillon, Rogan, Carolla, Theo Vaughn, Red Scare, Megyn Kelly. Even though I disagree strongly with most of them, at least I trust them to be honest because they aren't covering for anyone and they aren't beholden to a party, at least yet. Bill Maher, Dave Rubin, Brett Weinstein, a very special episode of 1,000-Pound Sisters. With big issues like war, the Biden presidency made the entirety of legacy media irrelevant. All you have left is Fox and a growing, powerful mass of independent voices. So instead of complaining about the death of media, rejoice. Debate has never found more legitimate paths to daylight.
Amen. And that's why we're fighting so hard for a press pass. And that's why we're doing this. And I think that's why a lot of you support this show financially with your hard-earned money, is you understand that legacy media has let us down too many times. And if we do not help restore truth and balance to the conversation, then nothing is going to get better. Nothing's going to change. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special thank you to our paid subscribers who help support our show. If you'd like to support our show for $5 a month, you can go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. I met a nice man gassing up today. And he said, "Are you Brandy Cruz?" I said, "Yes." And we were chatting and he said, "You know, I've been a freeloader on Spotify, but now that I've met you, I'll subscribe and support the show." I said, "I love that. Great." You can do that too. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We'll be back with our final live show of the week. Tomorrow, I'm starting it off with what I believe was the intention behind inserting certain tax breaks into the income tax proposal. And it's quite nefarious. So that will be our lead story on the show tomorrow. See you then.